Chapter 7. Dash Innocent, the bishop of the Presbytery of Rome. He sent an embassy to Illyric Jovius, prefect of Italy. Embassy dispatched to the emperor. Events concerning Illyric. Although ambassadors were dispatched to treat of peace, 1. The enemies of Illyric at the court of the emperor sedulously guarded against the conclusion of any treaty with him. But after this, when an embassy had been sent to him by Innocent, bishop of Rome, and Illyric was summoned by a letter of the emperor, he repaired to the city of Ariminum, which is 210 stadia distant from Ravenna. He encamped beyond the walls of the city, and Jovius, the prefect of Italy, held a conference with him and conveyed his demands to the emperor, one of which was that he might be appointed by an edict to the generalship of the cavalry and infantry. The emperor gave full power to Jovius to grant Illyric as much money and provision as he might desire, but refused ever to confer this dignity upon him. Jovius unadvisedly awaited the messenger from the palace, in the camp of Illyric, and commanded the decision of the emperor to be read in the presence of all the barbarians. On finding that the dignity was denied him, Illyric was enraged at the result, ordered the trumpets to be sounded, and marched towards Rome. Jovius, apprehensive of being suspected by the emperor of siding with Illyric, committed a still greater act of imprudence by taking an oath on the safety of the emperor, and compelling the principal officers to swear that they would never consent to any terms of peace with Illyric. The barbarian chief, however, soon after changed his mind, and sent word he did not desire any post of dignity, but was willing to act as an ally of the Romans, provided that they would grant him a certain quantity of corn, and some territory of secondary importance to them, in which he might establish himself. Chapter 8. Dash Rebellion of Italus and High's General Heracle, and how he eventually craved forgiveness is at the feet of Honorius. After having sent some bishops as ambassadors, on two different occasions, to treat on this subject, but without effect, Illyric returned to Rome, and besieged the city. He took possession of one part of Portus, and compelled the Romans to recognize Attalus, then prefect of the city, as their king. 2. When the Romans had been nominated for the other offices, Illyric was appointed general of the cavalry and infantry, and Attulfus, the brother of his wife, was raised to the command of the force called the domestic cavalry. Attalus assembled the senators, and addressed them in a long and very elaborate discourse, in which he promised to restore the ancient customs of the Senate, and also to bring Egypt and the other eastern provinces under the sway of Italy. Such was the boastfulness of man, who was not destined to bear the name of sovereign during the space of a single year. He was deceived by the representations of some diviners, who assured him that he would be able to conquer Africa without a battle. He disobeyed Illyric, who urged him to send a moderate force to Carthage, to slay the officers of Honorius, in case of their attempting any resistance. He also refused to follow the counsels of John, to whom he had given the command of the royal cohorts about his own person, and who advised him to entrust Constance, on his proposed departure for Libya, with a document which they call edict, as though sent by Honorius, by which Heracle might be dispossessed of office. He had been entrusted with the rule of the soldiers in Africa. Had this artifice been adopted, it would probably have proved successful, for the designs of Attalus were unknown in Libya. But as soon as Constance had set sail for Carthage, according to the advice of the diviners, Attalus was so weak in mind that he did not think it doubtful, but believed that the Africans would be his subjects, according to the prediction of the diviners, and marched at the head of his army towards Ravenna. When it was announced that Attalus had reached Ariminum, with an army composed partly of Roman and partly of barbarian troops, Honorius wrote to him to acknowledge him as emperor, and deputed the highest officers of his court to wait upon him, and offer him a share in the empire. Attalus, however, refused to share power with another, and sent word that Honorius might choose an island or any spot of ground that he pleased for his private residence, and that he would be allowed every imperial service. The affairs of Honorius were reduced to so critical a condition, that ships were kept in readiness to convey him, if it were necessary, to his nephew. When an army of 4,000 men which had started from the west arrived unexpectedly during the night at Ravenna, Honorius caused the walls of the city to be guarded by this reinforcement, for he distrusted the native troops as inclined to treachery. In the meantime, Heracle had put Constans to death, and had ranged troops along the ports and coasts of Africa to hinder the merchant vessels from going to Rome. When, as a consequence, a famine seized the Romans, they sent a deputation to Attalus about it. Being at a loss what measures to adopt, he returned to Rome to consult the Senate. The famine was so grievous that chestnuts were used by the people to supply the place of corn, and some persons were suspected of having partaken of human flesh. Alaric advised that 500 barbarians should be sent into Africa against Heracle, but the senators and Attalus objected that Africa ought not to be entrusted to barbarians. It then became evident to Alaric that God disapproved of the rule of Attalus, and finding that it would be futile to labor for a matter which was beyond his power, and after receiving certain pledges, he agreed with Honorius to deprive Attalus of his sovereignty. All the parties concerned assembled together without the walls of the city, and Attalus threw aside the symbols of imperial power. His officers also threw aside their girdles, and Honorius granted pardon to all for these occurrences, and each was to hold the honor and office which he had first had. Attalus retired with his son to Alaric, for he thought his life would not be in safety as yet, if he continued to dwell among the Romans. Chapter 9. The disturbance which the Greeks and Christians had about Attalus. The courageous Seros, Alaric, by a stratagem, obtains possession of Rome, and protected the sacred asylum of the Apostle Peter. The failure which had attended the designs of Attalus was a source of deep displeasure to the pagans and Christians of the Arian heresy. 1. The pagans had inferred from the known predilections and early education of Attalus, that he would openly maintain their superstitions, and restore their ancient temples, their festivals, and their altars. The Arians imagined that, as soon as he found his reign firmly established, Attalus would reinstate them in the supremacy over the churches which they had enjoyed during the reigns of Constantius and of Valens, for he had been baptized by Sieges Arius, 2, bishop of the Goths, to the great satisfaction of Alaric and the Arian party. Soon after, Alaric stationed himself among the Alps, at a distance of about 60 stadia from Ravenna, and held a conference with the emperor concerning the conclusion of a peace. Seros, a barbarian by birth, and highly practiced in the art of war, had only about 300 men with him, but all well disposed and most efficient. He was suspicious of Alaric on account of their former enmity, and reasoned that a treaty between the Romans and Goths would be of no advantage to him. Suddenly advancing with his own troops, he slew some of the barbarians. Impelled by rage and terror at this incident, Alaric retraced his steps, and returned to Rome, and took it by treachery. He permitted each of his followers to seize as much of the wealth of the Romans as he was able, and to plunder all the houses, but from respect towards the Apostle Peter, he commanded that the large and very spacious church erected around his tomb should be an asylum. This was the only cause which prevented the entire demolition of Rome, and those who were there saved, and they were many, rebuilt the city. Chapter 10. A Roman lady who manifested a deed of modesty. It is obvious that the capture of so great a city as Rome must have been attended with many remarkable circumstances. I shall, therefore, now proceed to the narration of such events as seem worthy of a place in ecclesiastical history. 3. I shall recount a pious action performed by a barbarian, and record the bravery of a Roman lady for the preservation of her chastity. The barbarian and the lady were both Christians, but not of the same heresy, the former being an Arian, and the latter a zealous follower of the Nicene doctrines. A young man of Alaric's soldiers saw this very beautiful woman, and was conquered by her loveliness, and tried to drag her into intercourse, but she drew back, and exerted herself that she might not suffer pollution. He drew his sword, and threatened to slay her, but he was restrained by the passion which he entertained towards her, and merely inflicted a slight wound on her neck. The blood flowed in abundance, and she offered her neck to the sword, for she preferred to die in her chastity than to survive, after having consorted lawfully with a husband, and then to be attempted by another man. When the barbarian repeated his purpose, and followed it with more fearful threats, he accomplished nothing further. Struck with wonder at her chastity, He conducted her to the church of Peter the Apostle, and gave 6 pieces of gold for her support to the officers who were guarding the church, and commanded them to keep her for her husband. Chapter 11. The tyrants who in the West at that time rebelled against Honorius. They are wholly destroyed on account of the emperor's love of God. During this period many tyrants rebelled against Honorius in the Western government. Some fell upon one another, while others were apprehended in a marvelous way, and so evidenced that the divine love toward Honorius was not common. The soldiers in Britain, 1, were the first to rise up in sedition, and they proclaimed Mark as tyrant. Afterwards, however, they slew Mark, and proclaimed Gratian. Within 4 months subsequently they killed Gratian, and elected Constantine in his place, imagining that, on account of his name, he would be able to reduce the empire firmly under his authority. And for no other reason than this, several other persons of the same name were elected to the tyranny. Constantine passed over from Britain to Bononia, a maritime city of Gaul, and after inducing all the troops in Gaul and Aquitania to espouse his cause, he reduced to obedience 50 the inhabitants of the regions extending to the mountains which divide Italy from Gaul, and which the Romans have named the Cotian Alps. He then sent his oldest son, Constans, whom he had already nominated Caesar, and whom he afterwards proclaimed emperor, into Spain. Constans, after making himself master of this province, and appointing his own governors over it, commanded that Didymus and Virginian, relatives of Honorius, should be loaded with chains, and brought before him. Didymus and Virginian had at first differed among themselves, but a reconciliation was effected between them, when they found themselves menaced by the same danger. They combined their forces, which consisted chiefly of armed peasants and slaves. They attacked Lusitania in common, and slew many of the soldiers sent by the tyrant for their capture. Chapter 12. Theodosiolus and Legodius, the races of the Vandals and Suevi. Death of Lyric. Flight of the tyrants Constantine and Constans. The troops of Constans were shortly afterwards strengthened by reinforcements, and Didymus and Virginian, with their wives, were taken prisoners, and were eventually put to death. 2. Their brothers, Theodosiolus and Legodius, who were living in other provinces, fled the country. The former escaped to Italy, to the emperor Honorius; the latter fled to the east, to Theodosius. After these transactions, Constans returned to his father, after he had posted a guard of his own soldiers for the road to Spain, for he did not permit the Spaniards to act as guard, according to the ancient custom, a privilege for which they had petitioned. This precaution was probably afterwards the cause of the ruin of the country, for when Constantine was deprived of his power, the barbarous races of the Vandals, Suevi, and Alani took confidence and conquered the road, and took possession of many forts and cities in Spain and Gaul, and arrested the officers of the tyrant. In the meantime, Constantine, who still thought that matters would go according to his purpose, caused his son to be proclaimed emperor instead of Caesar, and determined to possess himself of Italy. With this view, he crossed the Cotian Alps, and entered Livorno, a city of Liguria. He was on the point of crossing the Po, when he was compelled to retrace his steps, upon being informed of the death of Alavicus. This Alavicus was the commander of the troops of Honorius, and being suspected of conspiring to place the entire Western government under the domination of Constantine, he was slain when returning from a procession, in which, according to custom, it was his office to march in advance of the emperor. Immediately after this occurrence, the emperor descended from horseback, and publicly returned thanks to God for having delivered him from one who had openly conspired against him. Constantine fled and seized Ares, and Constans, his son, hastened from Spain, and sought refuge in the same city. On the decline of the power of Constantine, the Vandals, Suevi, and Alani eagerly took the Pyrenees when they heard that it was a prosperous and the most abundant region. And since those who had been entrusted by Constans with the guard of the passage had neglected their duty, the invaders passed by into Spain. Chapter 13. Concerning Gerontius, Maximus, and the troops of Honorius. Capture of Gerontius and his wife, their death. Meanwhile Gerontius, from being the most efficient of the generals of Constantine, became his enemy, and believing that Maximus, his intimate friend, was well qualified for the tyranny, he invested him with the imperial robe, and permitted him to reside in Tarraconia. Gerontius then marched against Constantine, and took care to put Constans, the son of Constantine, to death at Vienna. As soon as Constantine heard of the usurpation of Maximus, he sent one of his generals, named Edovicus, beyond the Rhine, to levy an army of Franks and Alemanni, and he sent his son Constans to guard Vienna and the neighboring towns. Gerontius then advanced upon Aries and laid siege to it, but directly, when the army of Honorius had come to hand against the tyrant, under the command of Constantius, the father of that Valentinian who subsequently became emperor of Rome, Gerontius retreated precipitately with a few soldiers, for the greater number of his troops deserted to the army of Constantius. The Spanish soldiery conceived an utter contempt for Gerontius, on account of his retreat, and took counsel how to slay him. They gathered in close ranks and attacked his house at night, but he, with one Alanus, his friend, and a few servants, ascended to the top of the house, and did such execution with their arrows that no less than 300 of the soldiers fell. When the stock of arrows was exhausted, the servants made their escape by letting themselves down secretly from the building, and Gerontius, although he might have been saved in a similar fashion, did not choose to do so, because he was restrained by his affection for Noetia, his wife. At daybreak of the next day, the soldiers cast fire into the house. When he saw that there was no hope of safety left, he cut off the head of his companion, Alanus, in compliance with his wish. After this, his own wife was lamenting, and with tears was pressing herself with the sword, pleading to die by the hand of her husband before she should be subjected to others, and was supplicating for this last gift from him. And this woman by her courage showed herself worthy of her religion, for she was a Christian, and she died thus mercifully. She handed down to time a record of herself, too strong for oblivion. Gerontius then struck himself thrice with his sword, but perceiving that he had not received a mortal wound, he drew forth his poniard, which he wore at his side, and plunged it into his heart. Chapter 14. Constantine, the army of Honorius and Edovicus. High's general. Defeat of Edovicus by Ulfilas, the general of Constantine. Death of Edovicus. Although the city of Ares was closely besieged by the army of Honorius, Constantine still resisted the siege, because Edovicus was announced as at hand with many allies. 2. This frightened the generals of Honorius beyond measure. Then they determined to return to Italy, and to carry on the war there. When they had united on this plan, Edovicus was announced as in the neighborhood, so they crossed the river Rhone. Constantius, who commanded the infantry, quietly awaited the approach of the enemy, while Ulfilas, the fellow general of Constantius, remained not far off in ambush with his cavalry. The enemy passed by the army of Ulfilas, and were about to engage with the troops of Constantius, when a signal was given, and Ulfilas suddenly appeared and assaulted the enemy from the rear. Their flight was immediate. Some escaped, some were slain, while others threw down their arms and asked for pardon, and was spared. Edovicus mounted his horse and fled to the lands of one Aecdesius, a landed proprietor, to whom he had formerly rendered some important service, and whom he therefore imagined to be his friend. Aecdesius, however, struck off his head, and presented it to the generals of Honorius, in hope of receiving some great reward and honor. Constantius, on receiving the head, proclaimed that the public thanks were due to Aecdesius for the deed of Ulfilas. But when Aecdesius was eager to accompany him, he commanded him to depart, for he did not consider the companionship of a malicious host to be good for himself or the army. And the man who had dared to commit the most unholy murder of a friend and a guest who was in an unfortunate situation, this man went away, as the proverb says, gaping with emptiness.